everyone, and welcome to another fascinating show on the Peaceful Planet. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon. It is a glorious Saturday, and I hope you're all having a wonderful day. We have a superb guest with us today, Patricia, and she is the author, Patricia Corey is the author of The Cosmos of Soul, A Wake-Up Call for Humanity. And she's written a few other books, which we're going to bring her back on and talk about them as well. And her work is just awesome, so stay tuned with us as we launch into this an exciting book of all about ascension and what you need to know. And I want to also go into some of our announcements. I was recently in touch with Body, Mind, Spirit Journeys, and they asked me to be a featured speaker on the France, Mary Magdalene, and Black Madonna pilgrimage. And this is going to be a very exciting journey to France at the end of the summer. And as well, I'll be channeling messages from Mary Magdalene, messages from Mother Mary, and special messages from Princess Diana. We will be landing in Paris on the 30th, and then we will be there on the 31st for the 10th anniversary of Princess Diana's transition to spirit. And of course, I will be featuring her message there right in Paris. We'll probably have a chance to see the Alma Tunnel. Then we, of course, will be traveling through Paris and visiting the sacred sites, the Black Madonna. We will explore the Holy Grail, the enigmatic Knights Templar, the Cathars and their heretical practices, including a visit to Mont Secur, which is the mountaintop where the Cathars held out, and the elusive secrets of the René Lachateau mystery. And we'll be traveling all over France, seeing great works of art. And as many of you know, I'm an art historian as well as an artist, and I'll be bringing in all the history of the sacred sites. But the extra dimension you won't get on any other tour, which will be the wonderful energies and messages from Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary. And these will be given at the various sacred sites, like Notre Dame Cathedral and Chartres Cathedral as well. And of course, they won't be spoken, from the front of the pulpit or anything like that, but they'll be given privately. So you really want to think about signing up for this, and the price is very reasonable, and it includes all kinds of wonderful things. Your hotels are covered, your airfare is covered, and a lot of your meals are covered. So I want to give the website out where you can sign up for the tour, and it's www.bodymindspiritjourneys.com, and then there's a section where you go to Sacred Journeys in the upper left corner and press on the France journey. Also, it's posted now on the website of BBS on the Peaceful Planet show info page, right under the information about our special guest, Patricia Corey. And so you can actually locate the link directly, and you can sign up right there. And we are filling up fast, and I want to encourage our listeners to be sure and at least look at this material because it's gorgeous. And so anyway, I know it'll be very uplifting for all of you. I also want to remind you that my book is still available, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, and I want to give out my personal site again, which is www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com. And I also have beautiful artwork in the Diana Gallery. There are 6 or 8 galleries there, so be sure and surf through the gallery. And so our guest today is Patricia Corey, and she has written a magnificent book titled The Cosmos of Soul, A Wake-Up Call for Humanity. Patricia, are you with us there today?
I sure am.
It's so wonderful to have you on today. I'm going to read your bio, and then we'll launch into the questions, and my questions are not preset, and we can go anywhere we want with all of this, and I'm sure it's going to be very interesting. Patricia is a native of the San Francisco Bay Area, has been immersed in the New Age movement since its inception there in the early 70s. She has utilized her clairvoyant abilities in healing and support work throughout her life, which has been dedicated in great part to the study of mysticism and philosophy, ancient civilizations, metaphysical healing, spirituality, and extraterrestrial life. A dedicated teacher, Patricia is helping many realize their natural healing abilities, raise their awareness, and integrate the higher frequencies that are permeating our space as the entire solar system prepares for ascension. Above all, she is committed to calling people to action, rising above their fear and sense of impotence to become empowered, positive members of the global and galactic community. She has lived in Italy since she immigrated to Rome in 1983, knowing she had to take part in a mission, as she was instructed by her guides that she would have to help burn a hole in the lead dome. In 1995, she founded the Lightworkers Association, a non-for-profit, one of the first spirit centers to appear in the Eternal City, whose studio served as a healing center school and the city's only New Age library. She's a prominent figure in the New Age movement, well known on the international lecture circuit, offering courses, seminars, workshops in and around the world on her vast range of topics, which reflects her broad knowledge of alternative methodology and healing, her mission as the voice of the Syrian High Council, and her remarkable gift of helping others rekindle and ignite the power within. Patricia is committed to visiting all of the sacred sites of the planet as part of her personal initiation, and to serve and assist those who seek the guidance, and she is well on her way, having journeyed repeatedly to Egypt, the Maya lands, the crop circles, sacred sites in England, Tibet, Nepal, Burma, Thailand, and Angkor Wat, Crete, and the main island of Hawaii, and many other magical places of Earth's vast libraries. In 1996, she established the Light Workers Travel Club, Mystic Journeys, and later that year led a group of spirit travelers to Nepal and Tibet, to whom she introduced the sacred temples and breathtaking landscape of the Tibetan plains and Nepal. So, Patricia, what a bio you have there, and what a book you've written. It's totally amazing.
I'm getting old. Plenty of time to do a lot of fascinating things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I just loved your book, and I couldn't put it down. And this book came to you in an unusual way. And on my show, because I myself am a channel for various of the Ascended Masters and other higher beings, I completely resonate with your work, and I completely know it to be profound and full of such wisdom and just a joyful reading experience as well. And I know that some of the listeners may have problems with or confusion about hearing from the Syrian High Council. But before we launch into them particularly, I wonder, I think the way you introduced the reader to it through your experience at Stonehenge and being in the either circle at Stonehenge or inside of a crop circle, if you could kind of...
Inside a crop circle, in fact.
Yeah. And if you could relive that a little bit and explain how the connection was made to this interdimensional group that you work with and how the wisdom started to come through you.
Okay. I think probably many of your listeners will know about the crop circles, but since you are in the States and most of them are appearing in England, many people still may not have entered. So I would like to say that it is a remarkable experience to enter the crop formations because of the mere entering, the approach to these vortices, you can feel the real ones, because some of them are, of course, man-made, but the real ones, I like to call them, you begin to feel all kinds of body changes. You feel electrified. You can really perceive something going on other dimensions. And I was called into this crop circle. It's a rather long story, but basically I was in England I was doing a color therapy program at a school in England, and during the night I dreamt that I was flying over this formation. And at that point, it was some time ago, 96, I didn't know very much about crop circles, but I saw myself flying over Stonehenge, and to the side of Stonehenge was this incredible glyph, which we now know as the Julia Set. This is one of the most important crop formations to come down in England in 1996. Mm-hmm. And a voice told me that I had to pay extreme attention to this. This was a lock-on point for extra-dimensional contact, and it was going to be very important for me. And when I woke up, I referred this to the people in college, and a long series of coincidences, as we like to call them, brought me to Glastonbury. We had some time down on the weekend. And there I saw this exact formation, Stonehenge, and this spiral glyph in the bookstore on the wall. I was flabbergasted because I had never seen it before, and I was told that this was the latest glyph that had come down and that it was by far the most important to that point, and that people were coming from all over the world. There were monks, the Tibetan lamas, Native Americans, Mayans, etc., had been called in to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And so the professors at the college decided that I needed to go see it, and when I got into it, I lost consciousness for about an hour. And during that time, I believe I was attuned to receive this information, this content.
Yeah, and that's marvelous. You know, I teach art history as well, and I had a student whom I've known a greater part of my life. It was a joy to have this student in my class again because she had been in my elementary classes as well. And, you know, she, who comes from sort of a fundamentalist upbringing and everything, on the first day of class recounted her experience of being inside of a crop circle and said that the energy was so extreme that she felt lightheaded and strange when she was in the circle. And she said there's a definite energy to them, and she believed that they were created by some higher level of extraterrestrial life. So, you know, there you have it. From a young student of mine. So it's very interesting mm-hmm. the way you made your connection through the crop circles, and then you began receiving these messages, and you liken it to being sort of a radio tuner, which is exactly how I feel about my channeling. I feel that it's just sort of a gift that we have, and we are able to tune into the various thought processes that are going on all over the universe, and it's just really not as weird as it sounds, because we as human beings can access higher dimensional intelligence once we open our minds and begin to practice the.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you think about the radio and what it would have appeared to be to people 200 years ago. Or 300. I don't really know when the radio came in.
I think it was
the idea of turning a station and getting a whole other frequency.
Yeah.
Would have been so unthinkable.
And yeah.
And I believe the human mind. We have told that we use 20% of our brain, 80% of the brain still undefined, and most certainly it's there for a reason. And I really do believe that we all have the capacity. And why certain people tune in earlier than others, I'm not quite sure. I'm pretty sure it must have something to do with your development spiritually and your willingness to open and expand your consciousness.
Absolutely. But, you know, you just have so much incredible wisdom from the so-called Syrian High Council, and it's an amazing, fascinating revelation that you have here. It's a complete teaching unto itself. It reflects a lot of other channeled material I've seen, but the clarity with which you receive it is magnificent. So it gets into a lot of different concepts that I've encountered in other New Age literature before, but you know, each chapter is so well written, and they talk about many, many different aspects that we as a human race are not really aware of. And one of the first things they talk about is a place that I teach often in my courses of the Great Pyramid of Giza, and they elaborate on that as being a portal to the divine, which is exactly what the Egyptian pharaohs believed it to be. And I wonder if you could describe that mm-hmm. a little bit.
Have you been in the pyramids?
No, I haven't. I've only taught about it. I plan to visit soon, but it's not on my itinerary, at least for this year.
Yeah, well, you're pretty busy, but hopefully we will be able to go together. I've
well,
just
wouldn't
come
that
back
be lovely?
From bringing group there.
Uh-huh, that would be
it
great.
Would be.
So,
every time I've gone in now, about 8 times, I've always either been alone or with a group that I have brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And what we perceive there is, well, first of all, it's a musical chamber. I believe that the pyramid is an energy device. It's linked into the heart of Gaia, and it resonates out into the universe, bridging the dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a musical chamber, so sound is accelerated. It's almost like a time machine. It's so complex.
Yes.
And when you're in there doing any kind of ceremony or ritual, you can feel that the walls of the pyramid are actually multidimensional doors.
Mm-hmm. It's been said.
So I believe it's the master switch of all the sacred sites on this planet.
Mm-hmm. It's very powerful, that's for sure. It's huge. And they certainly can't figure out how it was all built. There's just no rational explanation for the
Right, because it defies rationality, because you have to be there in your heart in order to touch it.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's been used for centuries for initiations, and there were mystery schools, especially at the time of Jesus, that used the pyramid. So it was more than just a burial chamber for the pharaohs. It was something much, much more. And I love the way
Well, in fact, it's never been proven to have been a burial chamber, even though there's the so-called sarcophagus. There's no proof that that granite box was ever really really contained any pharaoh.
That
it's
is
just
so true.
Speculation from the establishment.
That is true, and in actuality, no mummy's been found. They say that it was robbed, but there are many other theories, of course. And you know, it's possible that it would have been used for something entirely different as well, because there's no evidence.
Well, first of all, if it had been the greatest tomb ever created, because it's certainly the Great Pyramid, then why isn't there a carving on the wall? If you've been to any of the tombs in Egypt, they're carved, and they're exquisite with carvings depicting the afterlife and the procedure of the soul, the processing of the soul. There's no carving in the Great Pyramid. And
I didn't realize
that. That doesn't make sense.
I know there were statues that would have been placed there at one time, but those have since been removed from each of the pharaohs. But anyway, it's fascinating because they talk about the pyramid and its relationship to some of the structures on Mars, and that they are saying that there was life on Mars, and they apparently at Cydonia there are other pyramids there. So they link everything on Earth to other things going on in our solar system, and that is also fascinating, and it's largely repressed.
Well, we've been taught that we are orphans in the universe, and that we are the only life, intelligent life in the universe, which we are assured by so many of the beings that you channel, the Searing Council, and so many others, that we are part of a galactic fraternity of life. Certainly, I have to say that if the human race is the highest form of intelligence in the universe, then I've got some concern for the universe.
Absolutely.
Because
we're not doing
a very good job of handling our planet at the moment.
We have not reached the peaceful planet, as in the end of wars, for one thing, which any civilized society would have been able to do by now. And then secondly, these religious ideas that seem to be fueling the wars. Also, now, you know, this book paints a very interesting picture on some of the major religions. And while we're not getting into putting down any particular one, I thought it was interesting the way your guides described the lead dome that you had to, and they were referring, I believe, to St. Peter's and the Vatican there.
That's right, which of course made it a little challenging for me to put that in writing.
Mm.
But I feel that what we're being told is that what matters is the journey of spirit, your individual experience, and how you bring that forward to the community. And it's not about obedience, and it's not about penance. And a God would never be judgmental, only loving. If you consider a God, however you perceive that to be, as the extreme, ultimate intelligence and light and love, then it certainly couldn't be about judgment. And most likely the judgment is your own spirit, your own soul, creating and then living, working through the karma of its creation.
Right. So,
and this obviously will rub against the religious dogma.
Yeah, well, I always did say that dogma was for the dogs, and that's right in the word there.
I like that.
It is for the dogs. I mean, really.
Yeah, well, the council, they want us to think for ourselves, to get off of our knees to the power and the establishment and be empowered by the beauty of simply the fact that we are, we exist, and we are sparks of divinity.
Right. And I completely concur with that definition of spirituality, that we are sparks of the divine, and it's up to each of us on our own spiritual journey to touch upon that divine and reach for the divine in our daily lives and strive to live it. And I think that's much more of a challenge than following the rituals. And, of course, all of these things have been pretty much superimposed and indented by the male-dominated clerics of any particular religion, whether Protestant or Catholic, you know.
So, yeah, well, you know, it's if you think about the, for example, in the ancient times, in the feudal system in Europe where I live, the bishop or the leading figure was all the people had to tithe to the church. The structure of the religion was that every Saturday they would have to come and confess their sins and tithe and leave money to the church. So not only was the church funded, but they knew what was going on with all the citizens. And this is, in my viewpoint, giving away your power to an authority. And the suggestion for the council is take your power and own it and work through your own karma and your own experience. So
right.
It is definitely a little bit anti-dogma. Quite anti-dogma.
I'm profoundly anti-dogma myself, having been raised Catholic and then been part of Protestant churches too for many years. None of them will accept the truth of my channeling from Princess Diana on world peace. So I kind of found out, you know, that it just doesn't flow with their thought process, because their thought process kind of stops wherever the particular theologian they follow, wherever their process goes, and that's as far as it will go. So I just don't deal with it. But, you know, I think you've got so many more things to say in the book, and the book, again, is The Cosmos of Soul, and I want to give out your website for our listeners and encourage them to visit the site now as they're listening or immediately after the show. It's at www.syrianrevelations.net. And there's just so much other information in the book. They talk about the up-and-coming ascension and what we as individuals and the collective of humanity need to know and need to do to prepare for it. And I know that it's a very complex sort of situation, but I wonder if you could elaborate on some of the things that are up and coming for us and what we as individuals and a collective need to become attuned to. I know there's a lot in the book about taking better care of Mother Earth Gaia, and there's a lot about taking better care of our bodies and eating more vegetarian and attuning to spirit, and there's just so much in there. But, you know, I hope you wouldn't mind sharing some of the ideas that they've given you.
Well, fundamentally, the council, the approach of this book and all of their material is that not only the Earth, but the entire solar system of our sun, which they refer to as Ra, is moving out of the third dimension. And when we talk about ascension, in their viewpoint, we're talking about the sun and all of our solar system, which is the solar body, moving to a higher state of consciousness, which will be clearing in the fourth dimension and then moving into the fifth. And so this is very different than the current mood that we're moving close to Armageddon, and that the end of times are here, and Nostradamus, and all of these forecasted catastrophes for the Earth are not the future, according to so many of the Ascended Masters and extra-dimensional beings that are speaking to us now.
So,
they have been through this process. They know what the experience is, because they also existed in the third dimension and are now, in the case of the council, have now moved into the fifth.
So they're coming from the sixth.
Their message is that the Earth is going to move out of this dimension, and our existence, for those of us who will ascend with the planet, will be a far more luminous body, far less density. And we begin this process of attunement now by, first of all, highly recommended the end of eating meat, which is bringing death into your body. It's bringing in the rage and the fear and the adrenaline and the suffering of the animal and reverting to a vegetarian existence. We, just think about that. I mean, how I stopped being an animal eater was that I had a vision. One day I was eating meat at the dinner table, and I saw, I had a psychic vision of maggots on the plate, and it just freaked me out.
Oh.
I saw these maggots crawling down the table, and I just couldn't touch it again. And then that evening, I was driving somewhere, and in Italy, in Easter time, they eat lamb, which I think we eat in America too.
Mm-hmm.
There was a truck full of little baby lambs.
Mm.
And I, they were looking out the slats in terror, and they were speaking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, so we give our children these cute little stuffed lambs for Easter presents, and we eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Something wrong with this picture. And it's all got a lot to do with us being out of tune with nature.
Well, I think that's what we need most of
it. Yeah, as we approach this time, it's becoming more and more evident that we are going through a great transition. And we are recommended to accelerate that transition by becoming more in tune with life around us.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more on your perceptions about eating meat, but there's also something they recommend, which is growing an organic garden, which, of course, I do. And it's wonderful to go out and pick your own lettuce and spinach and eat that every day. And they were saying that, in essence, you're bringing in foods into the body that are filled with light. And I couldn't agree more. It is a lighter vibration, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. And, in fact, whenever I've been taught by the shamans, that, you know, you really should ask permission when you pick that food. May I partake of your bounty?
Hmm.
And the experience of the food is so much higher,
mm-hmm.
so much sweeter, so much purer.
Well, thank you for giving me that reminder, because I don't always remember to pray before my food. Now, going back to what's going on Mother Earth and what's going on with so many of the prophecies, and what's going on in terms of what I've gotten, you know, just a little bit of mention here, that many of us who are psychic receive messages from a variety of ascended beings, and they all speak of these transitions known as the Earth changes. And while it's my understanding that they're going to be fairly cataclysmic, those of us that are tuned to the vibration of Mother Earth will be able to tune in and know where to be so that we're not in harm's way and that we will survive these. But I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on the changes forthcoming that they've seen for Mother Earth and, you know, ease some of our fears about the Armageddon, which is so deeply embedded into our subconscious, I feel.
You know, I think that the most essential thing that's required of us now is to get in touch with the reality that the one sure thing we have in this lifetime is death. And we fear it so much in our Western culture. Interestingly enough, the Tibetans spend their whole life planning for it. The Egyptians did the same.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the indigenous people prepare and celebrate this passage as passage. But in the Western societies, it is this dark, terrible place that we don't look at until it's upon us. And so I believe, and the council teach me, that in order to prepare for the transition that the Earth is going to go through, one needs to start to understand that there is no birth and there is no death. We cannot, if you ask anyone what their birthday is, they'll spew out their birth date and they'll tell you their sign. And I will ask them, well, what were you doing in the womb before June 13th? Weren't you alive then? Well, yeah, I guess so. So, okay, and then take it before that. What was the time of birth? Well, when my parents, when the cell and the sperm united. Really? Well, wasn't that cell alive and filled with consciousness? And wasn't that sperm? God knows there's no more focused energy than the sperm on its way to mate with that egg. Right?
True.
We
Very
cannot define
point.
The beginning of life. And we certainly cannot define the end of life. And once we understand that there is no death, it's merely a transition, we begin automatically to prepare for anything that would be resembling the fear of Armageddon. If you know that you are immortal, then what you're talking about is, what will these changes, where will they take me? Where will be my next phase? Will I stay on this planet? Will I harm the way, for example? What does that really mean? Is there really? I mean, of course, we're petrified of war and natural earth changes, but what is harm to them?
Mm-hmm, true.
Aren't we always, if we believe in spirit, aren't we always where we need to be? This is a very esoteric question. Personally, I have no fear because I know for sure that I'm immortal because I've seen myself on the other side. In an out-of-body experience, it was utterly mind-blowing. And I've experienced it, and I know that it's just so similar to here, to this, that it was very hard to discern the difference.
So you're saying,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So you're saying that what you have from the Syrian Council is that we will transition, but that we are going to a pleasanter, lighter dimension. And we will scarcely notice it. Describe, if you would, in greater detail, a little bit more about the solar system and what the sun is going through, because I found that to be fascinating. And no one in any of the other ascension literature talks about the transition of the sun and how we would interpret that. I would interpret what you're saying as something more scientific, like the sun sort of dying out, but I know that you look at it from a totally spiritual point of view, and if you could elaborate on both the science and the spiritual dimensions of it for us a little bit. I'm curious, what happens to the sun in this whole transition?
Okay, the basis of these teachings is that our sun has completed its necessary time in physicality. Whatever lessons, whatever karmic patterns it had, just like us. If you just use the macrocosm, microcosm concept to see the sun as a conscious, thinking, living being, just like we are, and the sun also has astral tubes, just like we do, and the sun is preparing to leave the third dimension, just like we will, and vibrate at a higher frequency. So, instead of the idea of the sun dying and everything dying and it's the end of life, we are taught that the sun has no longer needs to repeat the karmic process of being in this density, this very dense reality, and will be moving through its own astral tube, which scientists call black hole, into a higher consciousness, a higher state of being. And the planets are going with it because the planets are the chakras of the sun. And so they describe this passage as being so fast, faster than the speed of light. They tell me that the idea that we have of black holes is mistaken. You don't go through a black hole and burn and suffer and the horrible descriptions of science of what occurs in a black hole,
mm-hmm.
according to them, is not correct.
Okay.
You move through this black hole faster than the speed of light. So when people ask me, won't we be suffering? Won't it be just a fiery death? How can it be if it's faster than the speed of light? How could anything hurt you if it's that fast? And they assure me that we are going, and the readers, that we're going to go through this process so quickly that it'll take time for us to even recognize that it's happened. That's how fast it will be.
And
remarkable.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I've heard it described by others who do work of your magnitude. But it is still a little bit of a frightening concept, considering we are attached to the
three. Well, it's only frightening because we are ignorant of this process. It's something that we cannot possibly imagine, because it's our laws of physics are only applicable to the Earth.
Right.
But people have written to me and said, but this defies physics. I said, well, physics are only as good as our earthly knowledge.
Well,
imagine what in the Newtonian days,
yeah,
what we know now,
yeah,
they would have been burned at the stake for if they even dared mention, right?
Well, they
and
don't
so
think
whereas
they believe.
We are 400 years ahead of them,
yeah,
the light beings that are speaking to us now are, I don't know how many light years ahead of us they are, but I am being able to embrace the idea that if we're traveling faster than the speed of light, this transition will be so fast that we just can't even perceive of it, because we perceive movement rather than evolution. We look at it as physical movement. We're going to go through this hole rather than we're going to go through this experience.
And so when we come out on the other side, we retain our individuality as individuals, and we retain the same surroundings. We can create anything else that we want after we go through this ascension process. Do you have any idea what it's going to be like?
Yeah, well, we can create anything we want now, but we just don't do it, right?
Mm, true. So, in other words, we'll still be with a lot of the same people, or maybe we won't, depending on where we're at with our relationships, but we're going to be with others of like mind and be communicating more through mind, just as they do. It's kind of like what life is like on the other side is how it's going to be here.
Yes. Well, the council tell us that there will be a lot of transition on the planet, and not everyone will be ascending. And I asked them, well, what's the difference? And their blanket answer is, in the death process, you are not finished with the karmic wheel. You leave the body, you go to spirit, and you prepare to re-enter a physical reality for whatever purposes you have to resolve or to experience. And they always remind me that not everyone keeps returning because they've got bad karma. Many souls just enjoy it too much to give it up. But they assure me that Earth will not be a place they will be returning to, because Earth will no longer be in the physical dimension. I said, where will they be going? And they said, there are billions of Earth-like planets on the physical plane. Some of them are so much like Earth that they may not even recognize that they're not there. They're not there again.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the ascension,
I thought Earth was going to stay in form in some respect. I didn't get the whole picture, apparently, that it would be pretty much sucked into this black hole phenomenon. Now, is this actually predicted to happen according to the scenario of the 2012? Or is this, you know...
Well, the indigenous... One thing that's common to all indigenous people is that 2012 is the beginning of the great shift. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it's going to be, boom, December 21st, we're all going to pop out of the physical universe. But I think this is when... It's just, you know, get ready for takeoff here.
I see. Hmm.
But I don't think that our Earth is going to be, is going to disappear. It will retain, we have consciousness of form. If you who also channel, you know that a lot of spirits are still, have to hold the memory, the pattern of the physical form, and so will we.
Mm-hmm.
But it will be lighter.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is...
You have to remember that as attached as we are to our bodies and our physical forms and the physicality of all of our surroundings, anything that you put under a microscope is nothing more than a mass of molecules moving around.
True.
Our concept of physicality is illusion.
Yes.
Good illusion, but illusion nonetheless.
And, you know, on the higher levels, I know from working with various ascended masters that they build houses and everything on the other side, and they have an appearance of Earth, and it's just like Earth to them, and they experience it as such. They also experience their bodies. They're just lighter. So it sounds a lot like the pleasanter aspects that I've been made aware of through the guides that I work with on the other side, that it's a lot like that. I didn't get the picture. That
all of the books in the... I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying I didn't get the picture fully until you described it about the concept of the black hole, because I've seen the science programs on it, and it's pretty frightening, you know, because they think that...
Well, it's very... It's hopeless.
Yeah.
It's the universe is dying, and you're going to go into the burning... I can't even describe the science. Everything will melt down, and it's just, you know, it's
they
like
said that a lot
back
of
in the days of the flat world concept, that if you ventured out too far in a boat, you would fall off the world, and
that is their
who knows where you would go.
Black hole. They also said that it would be like all the matter in the entire solar system condensed on the end of a pin. That's what a black hole does, and it just sucks in and vacuums in more energy. Which is a frightening thought. I can't help but say that the concept, you know, even gives me problems, but that's probably because I'm still in 3D, and I can't imagine it, you know, as a something glorious. But
right, because we have an idea of the physical universe as being measurable,
mm-hmm.
as time being measurable, and as movement rather than evolutionary experience. I mean, imagine if you consider that the concept of ascension is this experience at the cellular level. You bingo, your whole cellular makeup is a different vibration. It's hard for us to embrace this. It's explained quite well in the book, and in fact, all three of the books.
Yes, and I love
this concept.
I loved your book, and I also happen to have a spirituality discussion group at my house, and inadvertently that night put on the Starseed Awakening CD, and it was really a trip. It was wonderful. It's very eloquent. So I want to encourage all of our listeners to read your book and to pick up your CD, and I want to give the website out again. It's www.syrianrevelations.net. And if you're listening and you have questions and you'd like to ask Patricia Corey a question, or you have a question for me, I'm going to open up our phone lines. I meant to do this quite some time ago, and I apologize to our listeners, but you're always free to call us here at BBS, and we're toll-free at 877-876-5227, or toll-free in Canada is 888-810-8322. So, again, if you have any questions that you'd like to ask about her book and the process that she's describing here with Ascension, you're free to ask. Now, we'll just put that number out there and hope we get some calls on your work. And, you know, we have about...
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
I did want to tell people that sometimes it's very frustrating to find the books because they're... definitely not mainstream books, but they can always find the books and the CD, which is only available through the site, through my site.
Yes.
So don't get frustrated. Just be sure to come to the store.
Yes, and I think it's a beautiful site, too. And we are going to be playing some special music in a few minutes to kind of celebrate your work, but we're not quite at that point yet. I wanted to cover some of the aspects of the secret government and the space conspiracy from Chapter 11 in the book, and if you would share some of the revelations you have in there. That's some really hot material, and a lot of people will, you know, a lot of people in the New Age movement have heard of all this before, but the way that they describe, you know, for instance, the chemtrails and things like that, we just had that on the show last week about this other man had written a book on the chemtrails and on HARP, and there are all these secret projects going on that are counterproductive for the keeping the well-being and the natural beauty of the Earth going, and they're really dangerous. So I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on those two programs.
Well, I think that we are pretty much aware now that there is a secret agenda. In fact, I think Bush is appointing a shadow government leader. It's pretty open knowledge now that there is this shadow government, which is a very well named, if I do say so myself.
Yes, and but I think when they talk about it, it's all the things that they deem top secret. There's a whole different form of government that operates with a black budget that has no answerability to Congress, and it's all under classified top secret stuff, and they've been doing this for at least 50 years or more since the invention of the atom bomb has come in, you know.
Yeah.
So it's well known that people know that the government has top secret projects, so, but what this is just really vast. So, you know, you did a really good job of having the courage to print some of this and bring this out. If you could elaborate a little bit for our listeners who may not have heard of this before.
Okay, well, you're integrating now not only Cosmos of Soul, but the second book, Atlantis Rising,
mm-hmm.
because some of that information is in the second book. But anyway, going back to Cosmos of Soul, they talk about, come on, the approach in that book is, you need to understand this, you need to embrace it, and you need to move on. Know that this is going on, and become aware of why, because this will empower you to take action. And so the bottom line is, we really don't believe that we have all these space projects going on, and, for example, let's talk about Mars, I'll get back to the moon. We have two craft on Mars at the same time. They arrive within 1 month of each other, the U.S. exploring device that's been photographing Mars' surface, and 30 days later, a European one. Don't you find that just a little interesting?
Must have been something.
And why is it that all we're seeing is pictures of a rock? If anything, we should see one of these craft photographing the other craft moving around, right? So the council tell us that, you know, you've got life, you've got colonies on the moon, out of range on the dark side of the moon, and you've got all kinds of underground communities, which have been explored quite a lot by Richard Hoagland and other people who have been exploring the Mars phenomenon. But there is a lot of underground life on many planets, including ours.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too. I mean, if you've seen the movie that came out last year on Agartha, I mean, I was amazed to read the chapter on the underground life that apparently migrated underground during the Atlantean times and built colonies underground. And there's just...
that's in the book. So you've read Atlantis Rising, too?
I read parts of it. I've been, you know, totally immersed in your work. I haven't read it all completely, Patty. It's really wonderful.
It's wonderful. Thank you for the endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all of this activity going on. Why? Why is the human race not allowed to know this information? The answer is pretty simple. You're not giving an answer. Obviously, if we are told that we are not alone in this universe, the lid is going to come off. And this is going to be extremely empowering to the human race to know that we are not the only life form in the universe. We have brothers and sisters out there. Aside from the fact that we are out there ourselves. And that would really be very damaging to the power structure. Try to imagine when fleets of UFOs start coming overhead, and they're coming, what will be the natural reaction of humanity based on the information that is fed to us by the media?
Well,
the obvious answer is total panic.
Yes.
Imagine, Wall Street would shut down immediately. Wall Street, as it is, if Greenspan sneezes, we go into near depression economically, right? Imagine if we had fleets of UFOs coming in, and suddenly the human being would not be worrying about the Jew or the Arab or the black or the white. It would be the human race and whatever is coming in.
That's right.
And so we are taught to fear that because it's a control factor. But I believe that we are about to have contact, final contact, where there can be no question, because
mm-hmm.
we certainly have contact all the time.
Yes, I've
and the whole of the human race is going to experience it. And many people like me are involved and in getting welcome committees going, sending out the kind of energy that this is. There are peaceful beings on this planet. Why do you think that the White House is all on about building these ridiculous systems in space to shoot off whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the space warfare.
We know that this is the big agenda, to get all these anti-missile systems up and going in outer space, making our space a militarized zone. Why?
Yeah.
What are they afraid of?
So it's much more complex than people would like to believe. And, of course, there are a lot of people that love to ridicule the whole concept of UFOs and ETs. But, once you read this book, I think you'll open up to understand that there are benevolent ones and there are some darker forces out there that Earth has been plagued with for years. And if there is a devil, it apparently would be the group known as the Greys or the Anunnaki. So, I don't think we have time to get into all of this, and we're just barely scratching the surface of your book, Patty. But we kind of have to wrap up the show and play our music for the audience. And my goodness, we're going to have you back. And I just think that your
I would love to do that.
Is profound, and you're so well spoken and brilliant in the way that you write. And I want to give the title out of the book again and the website. Encourage our listeners to tune in to your website and your book, The Cosmos of Soul, A Wake-Up Call for Humanity by Patricia Corey. She's on the web at www.syrianrevelations.net, and there are excerpts there that you can read, and I think they'll just be mind-blowing for you, and also her CD, The Starseed Awakening. So anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was really a pleasure, and we just didn't have enough time to cover everything. But I want to invite you back again after I've read Atlantis Rising and some of your other great work. And I really hope that you stay in touch with us.
Thank you, and thank you to all of your listeners. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to have come to you from over on this side of the Atlantic.
And when I travel this summer, I hope we get a chance to meet up maybe in Rome or France or somewhere. So we'll definitely stay in touch. And many blessings to our listening audience today, and we're going to close out with a very special song, kind of in honor of our guest, called The Stars Still Shine. And remember to do your place for peace on the planet by simply being who you are and adding your light to the world. And I say many blessings, and see you next time. Thank you again.
PeaceRadio.com.
Pacing the floor.